Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between. This is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, where every week we feature people who have overcome tremendous adversity in their life. But the good news is they usually come out maybe not 100% healed, but much better on the other side. And they're kind enough to come on the show and be generous enough to share what worked for them with and share their experience, strength, and hope, and how they get through, you know, these hard issues that we're going to hear. I'm really proud to have this woman that you're going to meet in a second on the show because of what she's doing. Her name is Elaine Pozicki. She's the founder of an organization called Prevent Opioid Abuse. And they're a national organization for those of us who listen to this show, or unless you're under a rock, you realize what, you know, the epidemic. It's just terrible, and it's insanity, and it's something needs to be done, and Elaine's doing something about it. But what her organization does is educates patients and parents about the risks of opioid-based painkillers. So many people on the show have told their story that they, you know, took painkillers for wisdom tooth or a sports injury, and we're going to hear what happened to Elaine's son in a minute. She's also the chair of a partnership for Drug-Free New Jersey, and I'm sad to say that Elaine lost her son, Stephen, to this opioid epidemic in 2002. But since then, she's been...
2012,
pardon me. I need my stronger reading glasses. I'm sorry, Elaine. She has since been leading the legislative battle against opioids by working to enact something called the Patient Notification and Conversation Law, and it's being enacted across the United States. And what it does is it requires doctors to inform patients about the potentially addictive qualities in these prescription drugs. And I know some people might say, well, we all know how addictive we are, but we don't. They hand them out like candy. My daughter tore her ACL. I couldn't believe how many, you know, pills they gave her. And because I'm in this field, I immediately did, you know, bought them to CVS and got rid of them. Because you don't want to also leave them in your medicine cabinet because of, again, what's going on. So I also want to give you their website. So go grab a pen, everybody, because this website and get involved. And really, Elaine's battle is all of our battles because it's affecting every community across the country. And her website is www.preventopioidabuse.org. So Elaine, welcome to Steppin' Out. Thank you for all you do. And on Steppin' Out, we begin at the beginning. And in your case, the beginning is what happened to your son. Can you share with us a little bit and take us back to what happened?
All right. I call it a nightmare because a recurring nightmare. Mm-hmm. Because it just keeps going and going and going. And this nightmare, mine began after Stephen was prescribed a very potent opioid called OxyContin, mm-hmm, with refills after a sports injury and an operation on his rotator cuff.
How old was he, if you don't?
He was 22.
Okay.
And it was at that time that Stephen became addicted to opiate pain relievers. Because you could become addicted in 5 days, which is probably about 20 pills.
Right.
And as parents, we didn't realize that something was wrong. You know, he was a little cranky, but that's sometimes, you know, that happens.
Let me ask you something. Was he still in pain, though, past the 5 days? You know, sometimes people are in horrible pain.
I don't think so. I just think he kept taking the pills.
I see. Okay.
I don't think too many people are really in that, you know, pain is okay to have because we're
right.
Not supposed to be using the limbs when they're,
yes,
when they're fractured or not.
Right. So he's 22. Is he away in college when this happened, or was he home where he had the accident?
No, he was out of, he was finished. He was out of college.
He was done.
Yeah,
okay.
He was snowboarding.
Okay. Ugh.
Okay, so it was at that time, you know, after he was given, believe it or not, he was given six weeks of the OxyContin. That was for the rehabilitation of after the operation also. And he started taking them, and I had no idea that they were addicting. And I even picked up one of his prescriptions because he asked me to, because he couldn't get them that day. Mm-hmm. And I just picked them up and just thinking, oh, this is, you know, he's doing well with the operation and, you know, mm-hmm. that he needed these.
Right.
But now Stephen really needed the opiates. And he's, after the 6 weeks were over, he was started to buy Vicodin and oxycodone and Percocets on the streets. Mm-hmm. And when the price at that time reached $25 a pill, I think they're about 40 now.
Oh my God.
He was offered heroin for $3 a hit.
Right.
Then he started using. There's a statistic that 4 out of 5 heroin users started with prescription opioid medication.
Wow.
Right.
That's a staggering number.
It really is a staggering number.
So life went on, yeah. And you picked up the prescription, and then...
I picked up the prescription, and then we realized that he was in trouble.
Was he so working at the time, or was he in between
He was
jobs?
Working at the time, but he uh-huh. wasn't... He was coming in late, and he looked disheveled, and now I can... Now I understand the signs and symptoms, mm-hmm. which I didn't know, and all of the parents that I speak to, they don't know either. You know, there's itching, there's no eye contact, the pupils are dilated, they don't call you back, they wear long sleeves even in the summertime, their personality changes, their friends change.
Mm-hmm.
They're very constipated, so you will see them having a laxative in their bathroom. There are all these signs that, when put together, you know that they're on it.
Right.
You know,
and now you would know.
Opioids.
Now sadly, now you would know. Right.
And now I know how addicting the opioid medication is. And when he got the prescription, he was not told that. That there are alternatives. This is a part of the bill, that of the patient notification conversation bill has in it, is that there has to be a conversation about alternatives.
Which they
so
don't.
So it's not just that opioids are addicting. You have to give, the doctors have to tell the patient what they could be using instead of, which could be acetamycin and ibuprofen together, and they are coming around to figuring out that they actually work better in the new studies.
And just so you know, if you're listening, to Steppin' Out, I'm talking to Elaine Pozicki, who lost her son, sadly, to this terrible opioid crisis, but she's doing something about it, and what she's doing is fascinating and should be interesting to any of us, because even if you don't have a child, we have friends, we have aunts, we have cousins, you know, and look for the signs, because oftentimes, like what Elaine's saying, they're there. I'm going to give you out the website again. It's www.preventopiateabuse.org. So go ahead. So what happened was you sort of, in retrospect, now you realized what was happening. But did you notice anything, or you just thought, oh, you know, Stephen's acclimating to life after college, or did you think everything was literally fine?
I knew that something wasn't fine because, as I said, he was late for work. He was disheveled. He wasn't picking up his dry cleaning. When I would go over to his house, he didn't have food in the refrigerator, you know. And I could see it, but I didn't know that was the problem. Right. I thought it was maybe he was depressed.
I was just going to say, did you think it was depression or he didn't like his job, but he didn't want to share it with you as young boys won't, you know, young men.
Yes. Right. So I didn't know. Mm-hmm. No. But then when we found out that when we sent him to his first rehab, which was at Betty Ford. How did I find out? I found a needle in his shorts.
Wow.
So and that was the most devastating day of my life because he was such a good kid. It's just amazing and smart, and I would never think. And at that point, I was actually angry because why don't you just stop? You know that this is bad for you, but the problem is that they have these opiates have an effect on the brain, you know, because it's the way this addiction affects the structure and functions of the brain by altering the ways in which the nerve cells communicate.
Right.
And it changes the shapes of the synapses and the size of the neurons.
Right. And it's this incredible craving. You know, it's horrible.
And this change is what is difficult is that the problem is not just getting over the addiction. It's getting over the brain change, which keeps you addicted.
Right.
Because you might not be physically addicted, but you are mentally addicted. This is very important to know this.
Right, because a lot of times people go and quote, you know, with alcohol, they call it drying out. But, you know, they go, they physically get everything out of their system. But like you said, you know, look, we've had stories on where people are sober for 20 years. Look at Philip Seymour Hoffman, even that actor. It's always with you. You know, it's very difficult. So anyway, so you found the needle. You were devastated. I'm assuming you and your husband sat down with him. And what happened next?
Well, he was in and out of rehab, mm-hmm. and every time, you know, he was so happy. He said, I'm so happy I had my family back, and mm-hmm. and it was very optimistic for us. And then he was sober for 2.5 years after the last rehab, and he let an old friend in who had drugs on him, and because his body was clean, he decided to use.
Right.
And he used.
And that's
and
often
then he
right.
died yeah. in his bed. He just died in his bed.
Right, and that often happens because they think they could take the same amount for anybody that's listening, and they can't because they don't have the tolerance.
And you know, he knew this. We talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're faced with looking at it, it was just a reminder of the feeling. And then the brain neurons kicked in, and he just had no control.
So the friend that he let in, did his friend leave for the night? Or they both fell asleep?
I don't think he was. I think he left.
Okay.
He left.
Okay.
And it was very confusing at that point, you know, when to sift through everything. But
so then the next day he didn't go to work, or you tried him, and then
no, my husband was going to a dentist appointment,
mm-hmm.
and it was canceled, so he decided to go over to see Stephen around 10:00 in the morning, and that's how they found him.
I'm sorry, that's devastating.
Yeah, that's how he found him, and then he came home and he told me, and it's just been, you're just never the same as a person, as a mom, you know,
right.
of all the things you hoped for your child, and, you know, at that time I was a stay-home mom, and I, you know, even then I did organic, and
right.
I don't know. It's just that you try to do your best, and you're just so shocked. How could this come from a loving family?
And you did do your best.
Right,
it's just
so,
illness.
And, you know, and there's, through all this, you know, I did all this research and reading and realized through all of the literature from the National Institute of Health that there's no difference between a pain pill addiction and a heroin addiction. You know, one isn't worse than the other. They're both devastating, and there's no free will to stop opiates when addicted.
No, and now they're more open to the Suboxones and the methadone and,
yes,
and other drugs, but often there was a big stigma about that, and sometimes there still is, especially for methadone, because you have to get,
yes,
it at a clinic, and it's terrible.
Right.
You know, it's
the stigma has to be removed, because it's not their fault that they were prescribed this medication from their doctor. And then again, most doctors, it's not their fault, because they were lied to by the pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
They were told that these drugs were not habit-forming, could not become addicting, and when they knew, it was true.
Right. And
so this is why we do a Do No Harm at the partnership, to educate doctors and dentists of the dangers of prescribing.
Right. And there's, like, one time I broke my nose, too, and I went to the doctor, and they x-rayed it, and I said, oh, but I'm not in any pain. You know, it's so strange. I'm not in any pain. You would think I would be. And they said, oh, no, but you're going to be later on this evening. So they gave me a prescription for, again, I forget how many, but way more than, and I never had pain. And I'm thinking, you know, what if I did even develop a little bit of pain? I would have had this huge bottle and thought, well, you know, I guess if I have a little pain, I'll take it. But, you know, maybe, I'm sure even if I had slight pain, Advil would work or other things,
right,
you know.
Right.
Advil is a great pain reliever. That's what that's what I started to give my daughter after I took her off of the, when she had the torn ACL.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh, your prescription's done. Meanwhile, it wasn't. And I'm like, now you got to go to Advil. And
teens love it. And their brains are not formed until they're 26. So they're so malleable, the brains, that it just affects them very quickly.
Definitely the young people. But I'm telling you, just from doing this show, it's happening to the elderly. It's happening to everybody. It really, you know, it's devastating to young people, because it's really, you know, it's a crisis. You know, it's what did they say last year? How many people died more than the entire Vietnam War?
Yes, that's correct.
You know, and when I heard that statistic, and most of them are, you know, or not, yeah, I would say most of them are young. You know, if we ever lost that many people to a war in 1 year, we would be horrified.
That's correct.
You know.
That's correct, but that's because of the stigma. They figure that they're just addicts. Well, senior citizens aren't, you know,
right,
bums on the street. They're getting so much medicine and then falling. And
look at how many people are obese in this country.
Yes.
You know. Try telling them you could never have, you know, an ice cream again. Like,
right.
And these poor kids or older people are like, their brain is screaming out. It's not their fault. They, you know,
right,
it's just not their fault. But anyway, I want to get back to, so mm-hmm, we're talking 6 years that you've been living with
years.
This. When did you start this crusade, which is awesome again? I'm talking to Elaine Pozicki, who's the founder of Prevent Opioid Abuse. And if you want to find the signs and work with your state to get this in place, please go on, learn about it. It's Prevent Opioid, let me start all over. Prevent, OPIATE, abuse.org. So I'm sure it took you a long time to even, you know,
to get to this point.
To do anything, right.
Well, it took us, I started with the legislation around 2015, and 2017 it was passed in New Jersey.
That's awesome.
And this was, you know, I testified in front of committees. And
here you are, you were just saying I was a stay-at-home mom, and now you're changing.
Now I'm doing all this.
Which is awesome. You know, it's sad that it had to be this way, but you know, you could have just stayed in, you know, home and So I really salute you. So you went in Jersey and you got it passed.
Right.
And now you're in a bunch of other states, which I read.
Yes, we're in Rhode Island and Connecticut and Nevada and Maryland, Ohio and Michigan and Utah. Washington State just introduced the bill, and South and North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Washington, D.C. are actively involved now. So
now here's my question. Okay,
yes.
I think it's awesome, and I think it's obviously there's no downside to it. But what if, like, the doctor isn't compliant? You know, or and you don't know that. Like, that's what I'm trying to gauge here. Like you don't know about your law. That's why I want everybody to educate themselves, though. And then the doctor gives prescriptions like he did to your son.
I guess you have to trust on a certain level. You have to trust. You know, we have so many messages out there. I have signs on Times Square that... I feel the doctors want to do the right thing, and I do feel, and they're not going to break the law. It is a law now.
Right.
So I do feel that
they'll do it. Yeah. There's a handful that are horrible, but for the most part,
And they're hearing that St. Joseph's Hospital and Christ Hospital in Jersey City, they're not giving opioids anymore in their emergency rooms.
I know, and some people are upset about that for the people that really are in pain, you know, but that's
well,
a topic for
to
a different,
excruciating pain,
or if they're terminal or, yeah, right.
That's what these drugs were originally manufactured for, the purpose of eliminating the pain in
terminal illness,
terminal
bone cancer
illness,
or something
and
very
then
painful, right?
In 1990, they did this huge advertisement campaign that it's good for everyone, and they started the fifth vital sign, are you in pain? And that's when things got out of hand.
Right. Well, you're doing something great. So now what's your life like now? Do you have to go on the road to all these different states?
Yes.
Do you have a nonprofit? Do you have a foundation? How do you fund this? Can anybody help you fund this?
Well, the Prevent Opiate Abuse is pretty much funded by my husband and I.
Okay.
And we travel to different when we're trying to introduce it into legislation.
Uh-huh.
We are on their roster and we testify.
That's
and
awesome.
I also have Dr. Andrew Kolodny helping me testify.
Oh yes, he's a big doctor in the addiction field. That's
awesome.
Yes,
he is. Yes.
Good.
And
I'm glad you have him.
He is at this moment he works at Brandeis University in the opioid research department, and in 6 to 9 months, I would say, we're going to have a feedback from a study that they're doing to see what the impact of the bill has had on New Jersey, and then we can use this. So
great.
That's wonderful that they're interested in this research.
But you, for all intents and purposes, you might have to go to 40 more states, right?
If I have to,
yeah.
Yes.
You're amazing. That's really...
If I have to.
Right. Can this be done on a federal level, or I guess...
That's, you know, federal level telling the states what to do. We are trying. That would be wonderful if it could just be across the board.
Yeah.
But I can't... It doesn't seem like that's... the way the politics work.
Right, or laws. Or
yeah. laws, you know.
Because,
the
White House just, didn't they just, billions they're giving over to, you know, to help each state. It would just be great if it could just...
With extra beds and rehab,
right.
Which we need, but we need to stop it before we have to get to that point.
Exactly. And, I think, yeah, I mean, you would know more than I would. Or maybe if anybody's listening and they want to reach out to Elaine about getting help to bring it to a federal level, I'll give you again the website, Prevent Opiate Abuse, Prevent, Prevent, Opiate, abuse.org. And you could get lots of information, and I'm sure they can contact you through that, right, Elaine?
Yes.
Good. So what's your life? We have a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
What's your life like now in terms of, You know, I know you're working on this. You said you moved from one area to another because that was helpful. And maybe share with some of the listeners
what it was like.
What you do for the emotion, you know, the emotional piece.
Well, for a while I didn't do anything, and then I, you know, it just has a toll on you physically. You know, I really got pretty sick and, you know, not feeling well and you know.
Sure.
And I didn't want to go out. And it was very difficult socially because people will always ask you, how many children do you have? And and then I say two.
And then how's I start your daughter?
Because I do, because I have a daughter.
And it's also, she's, you know, I'm sure it's very hard for the sibling.
They were
sibling.
Best friends. They were best friends.
Right.
And you know, it was very difficult, but we all went. I went for grief counseling, which I think is very important.
Right. And I think you have to realize you can't blame yourself again, because I hear so many people saying, you know, or the siblings, why didn't I see the signs?
Why didn't I know? Why didn't I know the signs and symptoms? Why didn't I know it was addicting?
Right.
What could I have done that would have maybe nipped it in the bud or helped him more? And that's why this legislation came to me, that this is the most important thing.
And I think it's awesome. And so, okay, so you had hard times, of course, and you're still going to, and we're all,
But then
but moving, you said, helped. I'm just trying to give for other parents out
moving
there.
Moving helped, helping others in the same situation.
Sure.
To let them know that I came through it, you know.
Right.
It was not easy in the beginning, but it does get a little better.
Right.
Through the help and understanding and going to these, you know, all of the things that I do with Do No Harm, you know, which is what we do at the New Jersey
and all the support
partnership
that you
New
get
Jersey,
from
right.
the other parents, right?
And then we have breakfasts, and I can speak with other people who have the same hurt, and you're instantly connecting with these people. You understand their pain. You understand how they feel guilty. It's trying to stop yourself from blaming yourself over and over again, because you cannot move forward when you're doing this to yourself.
And it does no good, and your son wouldn't want that for you.
No, and it makes you ill.
Of course. Now, did you go to any support groups? Like,
yes.
You know, for alcoholics, there's Al-Anon. But this is a specific, and we've had them on before, our parents. But anyway, you tell what groups you go to.
I went to GRASP first.
And what does that acronym stand for? Do you know? GRASP is for, because we've had people from GRASP on, for anybody that's lost a child to addiction.
Child due to drugs.
Right.
Because it's, yes. And, because it's different than when I went to other meetings. That
right, so
I
check that out, GRASP.
Everyone who died, because then other people's children maybe had died from cancer, and your child died of drugs, and you're in that mindset at that time that it's a shame. You're shamed a little.
Right.
You feel guilty. And
well, my someone I know that lost a son as well said, you know, there was a lot of stigma. This was a long, way longer time. And she said it was sort of like, if my son would have died of a brain tumor, I would have gotten flowers and casseroles. And people didn't know what to do or how to handle it. And I was isolated. And she said it was terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's a terrible feeling that we have to really work on.
And you're doing that. Well, I'm so happy that you came on and shared your experience, strength, and hope with our audience. I'd like to stay in touch with you and help you in any way that we can.
Thank you.
And I want to give out the website more time. Well, you give it out. Go ahead. You give it out.
It is preventopiateabuse.org. And there's just one little thing I wanted to say.
Absolutely.
The New Jersey Attorney General spoke at a conference, and he said that he attributed there's a decrease in opiate prescribing in New Jersey, and he directly related it to the notification bill.
Well, congratulations. Your son and you and your family and everybody should be very proud, and I'm very proud.
Thank you.
So thank you, and I will be in touch.
Thank you.
Okay, and for those of you that are listening, to hear more stories like these, go to steppingoutradio.com, steppingoutradio.com. Drop us a line, like us on Facebook, and we'll see you next time when we go Stepping Out. I'm Denise McIntyre, your host. Thanks for listening.